the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to another edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. Healthcare is a major topic today. There's a lot of dispute over the repeal or repair of Obamacare, originally called the Affordable Healthcare Act, now having gotten the name Obamacare. It is in the process of financially becoming unsustainable, which we knew that it was going to do. It's interesting, Jim, that in the debates we're hearing, that doesn't seem to come up too much, the pointing out that this thing just can't be sustained. So regardless of what you think about it, it can't be going the way it is. But one thing is for certain, for retirees, healthcare costs are rising at high single-digit rates. The average Obamacare premium is up 25% and going higher. Now, that's just an average, by the way. If you take states like Arizona, it's over 100%. And all of this, remember all the promises we were made during the debate back in 2008? You could keep the policy if you like it. You could keep your health care insurer if you like it. You could keep your doctor if you like it. And that, of course, health care cost would come down. It would make it cheaper for everybody. All of those turned out to be subsequently untrue, which leads us scratching our head as to who put this thing together. As a matter of fact, it's done just the opposite. So now that we know that costs are going to continue rising when you're talking about retirement, what are us mortals going to do? And when you're planning for retirement, how do you plan when you know that medical costs are going up so that you don't die broke?
We've discussed this, John, a number of times here on this show. And as we've talked about in the past, the two biggest expenses you're going to face if you're retired or nearing retirement are going to be your taxes and your medical expenses. And you've probably heard this figure. It keeps going up each year. Each year, Fidelity, the mutual fund family, has been tracking medical cost over the lifetime of retirees from age 65. And last year, it was $245,000. This year, it's $260,000. It's rising at an annual rate of 6.5%, more than three times the inflation rate that the government reports on CPI. And at a 6.5% inflation rate, next year, that will go up to $277,000. But here's the problem. John, it's just like, for example, Obamacare premiums, the average is 25%. But if you live in Arizona, it's over 116%. So it depends on the couple, their age, health history, longevity. Believe it or not, the longer you live, well, it figures you're going to spend more money. And also, there's another factor that comes in here that'll just blow you away. If you are in a upper income category, in other words, if you make between $214,000 and $267,000, that $260,000 will more than double. For a couple in the higher income bracket, instead of $260,000, the cost this year, brace yourself, $565,000. And that's because you are paying more. There's almost four tiers of cost for Medicare. And you could be paying $700 to $800 or more as a couple, depending on your income. So the more income you make, not only do you pay more taxes, but you also pay more in medical expenses. So once again, John, I go back to those two biggest expenses that people are facing in retirement, which is taxes and medical.
Okay, well, we know Obamacare is going up, and that's for people who have not yet transitioned into Medicare. What about Medicare costs for retired people? Have they done any studies in that area?
Well, I mean, the two reasons they cite that Medicare premiums are going up as much as they are, part of it is Obamacare because they're taking money out of Medicare system to pay for it. But there's two other reasons. New drug costs are rapidly rising, especially these new drugs that are coming out, biologics. And also, there's greater utilization. I mean, think of some of the medical testing equipment that we have today, whether it's CAT scans, MRI, and other sophisticated forms of equipment that they use in healthcare today. All that stuff costs money. But the biggest driver, if you are retired, of your medical expenses, believe it or not, is remaining healthy and longevity. Because let's face it, people are living into their 90s. We're seeing centenarians now. It's not unusual. We have quite a few clients. There's a retirement home close to our office, and they have quite a few centenarians there, John, and quite a few people that are in their 90s. So people are living longer, given better health, better nutrition, better medical care itself, the drugs that they're coming out. So all of this, it costs money. And that money is something most people that are planning for retirement, you know, it's that magic number. You go to a planner and they go, okay, I'm going to need X amount of dollars to maintain my lifestyle when I retire. And whatever that number is for you, depending on where you live. And that's what they go and they go for that number. But most of these plans do not include those figures we just talked about. $260,000 for an average couple age 65, $565,000 if you are in those upper income groups. So you can see where this can get quite expensive over a period of time.
Why is it that people don't seem to think about that? I mean, they sort of push it off to chance.
You know, I think a lot of people, when they're looking at their budget, a lot of individuals work for companies or maybe they work for the government where their healthcare costs are covered as part of payroll or it's a company benefit. But when you retire, you're going to pick up those expenses through Medicare. And I think also, you know, most people when they retire, unless they're doing it for healthcare reasons, you know, they feel pretty good. They're pretty healthy. They're just not in that mode thinking of, gosh, how am I going to feel? Or what could I possibly get down the road? And then all of a sudden, you're hit with something out of the blue. And all of a sudden, now you're facing those medical costs. But the longer you live, the more you are going to spend. And most people, John, as we talked about, are unaware of cost. And there's a couple assumptions out there. Some are assuming that either Medicare is going to cover everything or it's going to cover nothing. And the real truth of the matter is neither of those are factual. However, Medicare covers a lot less than most people think. It's only going to cover roughly about 60% of your medical expenses in retirement, which is one reason why you need to have something, what they call a Medigap insurance plan, that picks up a lot of the things that Medicare doesn't cover. It's one of the things, I'm on Medicare now, and it's one of the things I've discovered, John. You know, even with your Medigap insurance, it's amazing certain things they don't cover. You know, I like to get sophisticated testing that's done when I get my physical each year. Well, most of the stuff that I want done, that should be done, the more modern, the more advanced type of things like that, Medicare doesn't cover. So that's an out-of-pocket expense.
What are typical things for those, let's say, we'll pick age 65 going into Medicare now, that they don't cover?
Well, one thing they don't cover is the new drugs. I mean, a lot of the more advanced and new drugs are obviously when a company spends a lot of money developing a drug and bringing it to market, it could cost 15 to 17 years, and that's a lot of expense. It is more expensive versus, let's say, taking the generic. So the newer drugs, state-of-the-art medical equipment, more personalized care. One thing that's being used in cancer, the biologics. And the other thing that people just assume is there, it's not true. They don't cover long-term care. And they also limit diagnostic testing, such as CT scans and MRIs. Sometimes they will limit only four of those. And there's just things, for example, cataract surgery can be less invasive if your surgeon uses laser versus a scalpel. Medicare covers scalpel, which could be painful, takes longer. They don't cover the new laser treatment. So there are a lot of things like that that people look at and say, you know, I guess, John, it's like flying on an airplane. You either ride coach or you go in first class. It depends on what you can afford.
Yeah, I usually ride in baggage is actually where I wind up, given where I'm on. You know, but, you know, seriously, Sim, when you say those figures, Jim, $260,000, $565,000 if you make more income, it sounds overwhelming, and you just prefer to roll the dice and hope you don't need it.
Well, when you look at those figures up front, it's very daunting, but these costs, John, as onerous as they sound, the good news is they don't occur all at once. In other words, it isn't a lump sum payment that you have to plan. Although it could get quite expensive, especially, you know, for individuals that live into their 90s. They end up needing long-term care. All of a sudden, you know, that can range anywhere from $70,000 to over $100,000, depending on what part of the country you live in. Then all of a sudden, you are faced with a major expense. Imagine, you know, let's say you're living here in California. You're spending $100,000 to live here, which really doesn't put you in Beverly Hills. And all of a sudden, one spouse has to go into a long-term care facility. A cheap one may cost you $70,000 to $80,000, and probably closer to $100,000. All of a sudden, you're faced with almost double the amount of money that you spend. The most important thing, and I can't emphasize this much, is that you make plans for those costs and factor them into your annual budget. Even though you don't actually spend the money in any one year, you need to be putting money aside every single year into some kind of investment fund or a savings account. So you're going to have that money down the road when you need it, when you get into your late 70s, your 80s, or maybe sooner, depending on your health conditions. So, you know, if you just take a general rule, if you're an average person, add an additional $10,000 to $11,000 to your retirement budget that you should be putting away and planning for. If you're in the upper income bracket, that figure goes to $20,000 a year that you should be putting aside, because if you're in those upper income brackets, you can pay up to four times the amount for your Medicare monthly premium. And for two people, that can add up to almost $800 a month, John. So it can get very, very expensive, very easy.
Okay, so if I'm planning for this, I mean, and we talk about not letting it overwhelm you, what options do I really have then?
You know, one of my favorites, and it's my favorite for a number of reasons, is health savings accounts. They're one of the best ways to plan for medical. And if you can start this early, it's even better. And there are limits that you can put aside. It's kind of like, think of it kind of like a 401k or an IRA deduction that you get. And the limits are going up each year. They're indexed to inflation. For 2017, if you're an individual, you can put $3,400 a year into a health savings account. If you're over age 55, there is an additional $1,000 that you can put aside. It's called the catch-up provision. So if you're 55 and older, you can put $4,400 a year. Now, a family can put $6,700 this year, $6,900 next year. A single family is $6,550 going to $6,650, and the max per family is $13,100 this year, and that figure goes to $13,300 next year. Now, why that's really important, one of the reasons I like this. Now, if you listen, if you go back to April when we were doing our tax shows, remember the front page of your tax return is what we call deductions above the line. And why that's important is any kind of deduction that you have above the line reduces your adjusted gross income, which also factors into the amount of medical deductions that you can get. And that includes what you're spending on medical care, long-term care insurance. So this is a deduction just like an IRA. And there are three big advantages of a health savings account. They're my favorite. Number one, your contribution is tax deductible. It's not subject to Social Security taxes. It's not subject to Medicare taxes. It's not subject to income and state income taxes. So right off the bat, you're reducing your taxable income. Number two, while it's invested in the health savings account, it accumulates tax-free. So you don't get 1099s. You don't have to report any taxable income on your capital gains, interest, or dividends. And third, when you actually do use it for medical expenses, it is tax-free. So let's say you had, I don't know, let's say you accumulated $50,000 in a health savings account over your working career or between you and your spouse, and all of a sudden you start having these unpaid expenses that come due that are not covered by Medicare or, for example, a Medigap insurance. And I go back to, for example, like let's say there's a new drug that comes out that would better take care of your health needs, but Medicare doesn't cover it and your Medigap insurance doesn't cover it, you can use your health savings account to pay for it. Or, for example, there are new medical testing equipment or more personalized care. You can use those health savings accounts, and as long as it's used for medical, folks, it is tax-free. So there are three big major tax benefits, a tax deduction up front. It accumulates tax-free, and when you use it, it's tax-free. It's kind of like the 529 plans in many ways. It accumulates tax-free when you're saving for college. Then if used for college, it's tax-free. The government is basically coming in here. They know medical costs are rising. So what they're encouraging people to do is they're saying, look, if you save for these expenses, put money aside, we're going to give you tax benefits to do that. So by all means, I would really take advantage of it while you can, because what Congress giveth, as you know, they can take it away. And so you might want to take advantage, but I would say that's my number one choice for saving for medical expenses, because you're doing it, you're getting a tax deduction, and it's going to accumulate tax-free. Everybody should have one.
And are there any other options?
There's a couple of them. One of the ones that we use sometimes is we'll use, for example, a life insurance policy that has cash value in it that is no longer necessary. You know, the mortgage is paid off, the kids are grown up, they're gone to college. We'll use that and we'll do a 1035 option into a long-term care policy. So that's an option that we use. Another option that people will often use is annuities. Let's say they're at the age where long-term care premiums become real expensive. I'll get to long-term care here in just a second. But you have an annuity. Let's say the husband has an annuity on his life, the wife has an annuity on her life, and you just allow it to accumulate, and it's a set aside amount. And then what happens is, if let's say the husband has a policy, he never ends up using it, he passes on, well, the annuity goes to his spouse, so it's still there. His surviving spouse can use that annuity, allow it to accumulate, or annuitize it to produce monthly checks if you have to go into a long-term care facility. So converting cash value life insurance into a long-term care policy is one option. Another option is using annuities. And then the third option, and this really applies for people in their 50s, in early to mid 60s, that's when long-term care insurance is most affordable, is a long-term care policy itself. It's a medical tax deduction. You can take as an itemized deduction on your tax return only to the extent that your medical expenses exceed 10% of your adjusted gross income. That's why I still like the health savings account is still our favorite number one option. But a long-term care policy, and if you do get one, if you're getting one in your 50s and 60s, I suggest you get an inflation rider, because we know that healthcare costs keep going up and healthcare facilities are getting more expensive. So there's three or four options there, John. But the most important thing is have a plan. Know that depending on your income, you're either going to spend $260,000 or somewhere between $260,000 and $565,000, depending on what your income is. And so you need to start planning for it. And like anything else, the earlier you plan, the less you have to put aside. And that's why I think, you know, if you're not using a health savings account, by all means, start one for you and your spouse.
And so I guess the point here is that it's important to have a plan, because without a plan, you can run into very important expenses. And by the way, health savings plans, depending on your state plan, is a very good way to wipe out a lot of your state income taxes every single year. Some states are pretty generous in what they allow for deductions for your contributions to that particular plan.
You know, John, and the thing that is really important here, and I have a client whose mother was in perfect health. You know, she had medication, typical things that people do when they're age. But at age 85, she was diagnosed a couple of years earlier with dementia. And at age 85, she had a stroke. And when she had a stroke, she fell, she hit her head. It accelerated a lot of these expenses. And what happened is all of a sudden, they were faced with a long-term care facility that was costing almost $6,500 a month. And it is just basically something that just threw them for a loop, because it was something the family, I mean, she was living fine with the income that she had coming in from a pension, Social Security, and some investments. But the family was not planning on, you know, almost $6,500 a month. So it can hit you when you least expect it.
And I'd like to tell people coming up tomorrow on the program, Kevin Matsukata is going to be with us. Disaster preparedness. He works for the state of Hawaii in this area and why it is so important, especially in states where they are prone for these natural disasters, which guess who ranks on the top there, or one of the top states, Jim? It's California for the potential for national.
Really? Yeah. I would have never guessed.
I never would have guessed that. But terrorist actions are very important as well. What happens if Dan Gordon's book, Day of the Dead, comes true and there's a major attack of some form on a U.S. city, say with an improvised nuclear device or something? You need to be on your own. And people along the northern Pacific coast, emergency people are pretty well saying if the big one ever comes along the Cascadia Fault, which will be followed 20 minutes later by a major tsunami all along the western seaboard there from Northern California up through Vancouver, you're on your own for quite some time. And you have to understand that. And yet people don't seem to think that that's ever going to be a problem. So that's coming up tomorrow here on the program on Lifetime Income. Time for our lifetime study, or our real life case study, which is an hypothetical illustration based on real life examples. Names and circumstances have been changed. And as always, we have slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate the points that Jim is making here on the program. Okay, who's our fictitious couple?
This week is Tyler and Anita Rosales. Tyler is age 62. Anita is age 64. Both want to retire within 3 to 4 years. Given their life expectancy, both had longevity running in the family. Their life expectancy is age 96. Once again, getting back to these medical expenses, the longer and healthier you are, just think of it. It's more years you live, more years you're spending money on medical. They were fairly conservative. Their goals were income with capital preservation. Tyler is a project manager. He's looking to retire in 5 years. He's excited about spending time with the family, working on his golf game. His biggest concern, however, about retirement is managing healthcare costs, as he has watched his parents struggle to make ends meet due to the high cost of healthcare and assisted living facilities. Both of his parents are in their early 90s, and they are now on Medicaid since they have spent most of their assets. Tyler is looking forward to retirement, but once again, in that background, seeing what's happened to his parents, he doesn't want that to happen to both him and Anita. Now, Anita has made a recent job change to reduce her work hours and offer a sort of better quality of life, getting sort of, I would call it, pre-retirement mode. The new company provides more benefits than the previous job. However, she is still in the enrollment phase. Anita's mother passed away from multiple sclerosis, and her father is currently in his late 80s. She is concerned about running out of money in retirement and believes that her and her husband may have to work longer than they would like. She looks forward to spending more time in her garden and her hobbies, but once again, she has a concern. We took a look at their risk strategy. They scored 5 on a risk scale. Their portfolio balance risk scale was on a 7, so not too far out of line from who they were in terms of risk. What was important to them is, number one, not outliving their assets, given the longevity that runs on both sides of the family. They would like to have some assets they leave for their kids. And also, they wanted to get their investments in order, because they know, having listened to the show and having gone through the bear market of 2008 and 2009, and of course earlier, they didn't want to go through that again. And more importantly, real concern was managing healthcare cost in retirement. Now, their essential budget was roughly about $45,000. Discretionary was $20,000, so $65,000 a year. Tyler's salary, $81,000. Anita's salary, $78,000. Surplus of $94,000. So they were saving quite a bit of money. And there wasn't really much of a change in their budget for retirement. Instead of $65,000, it was going to be $61,000. Social Security would be $42,000, leaving about a shortfall of $19,000 a year. Their primary residence was worth about $500,000, and thankfully, it was free and clear. Tyler's retirement program was about $260,000. Anita's was $150,000. They also had personal assets in their trust, $350,000. They had a lot in precious metals, $525,000. That used to be a larger figure, by the way. Total investments, roughly about $1.3 million. Total assets, about $1.8 million. Once again, some of the challenges we had to look at is medical expenses and the high cost of long-term care, given that both of their parents, the ones that are living, are in care facilities. Also, life expectancy, given their good health. Also, it runs in the family. What we did is we did a balanced account between both of them, and that produced investment income of about $26,000. Their grand total income was about $68,000. As we would expect in retirement, their budget would be $61,000, which would leave them roughly about $7,200 in terms of surplus. We recommended that Anita enroll in a health savings program available with her new employer and that she make contributions into the account to help with future medical expenses. We also advise that she do a one-time partial transfer of her IRA to help fund the HSA. Now, Tyler has an underfunded cash value policy that will lapse in a few years due to underfunding. We recommended that he exercise a 1035 exchange into a new policy with a long-term care rider in order to allow him to maintain some form of life insurance for a longer period and also provide the ability to turn that policy into a living benefit should he need retirement care. We also recommended they update their estate plan, especially since they were getting close to retirement, and that would allow them to leave the legacy, especially their assets, to their children. So, John, in this case, a long-term care policy and also a health savings account that we were going to use through Anita's employer, which would give her above-the-line deduction, which would also help them on their tax return.
And I can't thrum this enough, being ready for natural disasters and emergencies. As I said, Jim, here, what was it, 2 years ago, Christmas week, we had a major snowstorm and windstorm back to back in the Pacific Northwest. Trees were coming down everywhere. Power was out for over 48 hours, much longer for other people. We have a generator here, so the studio kept on going and things kept frozen in the freezer, etc., because when you're out for long periods of time in the middle of winter, you're in trouble. You know, it's even worse in the northern states during the wintertime when heating is a critical issue, not just water and food. Or in the southern states, air conditioner, especially for the elderly, is very, very important. You and I both know what Phoenix temperatures are like, Jim, having family members there.
Oh,
it's
God,
brutal,
yes.
Okay, you know, brutally hot. And you can see why in Mexico the idea of the siesta began, you know, so during the hottest part of the day, everybody just went home and slept because you couldn't do anything else. And then they would come out later in the day when it started to cool down, and then everything happened at night. So
you're so true, John, because one of the things living in San Diego where we have perfect weather, I mean, you know, occasionally we get rains, but one of the things that really hit us is in 2007, I mean, half the city was ablaze, and we had, I think it was over 600, 700,000 people they had to evacuate. And thank goodness I knew Kevin from our church and knew that he specialized in this, and he gave a seminar at our church. And I went out and followed his advice, had a disaster preparedness kit, and I can't tell you how that came in handy during the fires. And also, I'm trying to think what year it was. It was 2011 or 12 when we lost power for the entire city. It went dark. There was a power station on the border between Arizona in California that went out, and we had a radio because at first we thought it was a terrorist attack, you know, given the events that were happening after 9/11. And we had our radio out. Thank goodness we had an outdoor barbecue. And so we could keep ourselves abreast, know what was going on. We were able to cook our food outside, but you never know when something like this happens.
When I remember that, I remember you were doing, remember we did the show during the fires, you were doing the show.
Oh, yeah.
From down at the, I think you had three families crammed into a tiny condo and a boat.
In a condo, we had three families, all of my sons and their fiancés, and we also had seven dogs, believe it or not, two Rottweilers.
I remember that. And we did the show from there, too, in the midst of all that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, between the dogs and cats. And, you know, I felt like Noah's Ark. But you never know when something like that happens.
No, and I should highlight that Jim will be doing the program from Easter Island as soon as California slides into the Pacific during the next disaster. So that should be interesting. But until that time, Jim, what are we doing on future programs?
Well, we're going to be covering the markets, and we're going to get into a little bit more planning issues. As always, that's what this program is about. So no shortage of things to talk about here. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.